You're listening to the BBS Radio Network, and this is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud, healer, author, shaman, paranormal investigator. Stay tuned. Up next is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud.
Welcome, everybody. This is Derek White Sky Cloud, and you're listening to, and you're watching me on television on bbsradio.com. Yes, we are on the screen. I'd like to welcome everyone in the Pal Talk chat room as well as the BBS Radio chat rooms. Welcome, everyone. Now, tonight, I'm doing readings. I'm doing readings this week. I was going to have a guest on, but I actually, that person had emergency in the family, so I'm doing readings tonight. So those of you who are interested in calling in, they were having the toll-free numbers. It's 877-876-5227 in the U.S. That's 877-876-5227. Yes, you have to call in. Those are in the Pal Talk chat room as well as the BBS Radio chat room. And the in Canada is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. International callers is 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. I'd like to thank some of the people, people in the Pal Talk chat room actually that have known me for a while, that actually introduced me and let others know this is what I do. Yes, the show is about readings tonight. The microphone is on. Yes, I'll be giving you guys readings, but you'll have to phone those phone numbers because people are asking, can I either give me a reading? Yes, you'll have to contact these phone numbers that are on this line, please. That's the only way I can do it right now. Oops, wrong number. Hang on. This is crazy. Okay, copy, and I'm in the line. Here we go, paste. These are the numbers. They're toll-free. Okay? Now, also this evening, I'll let you guys know, too, we have... okay, let me release that. Good. The PBS will take over. I'll put the microphone in. There we go. Good enough. We're in. BBS Radio is in online. BBS Radio, low-com, they are the ones that carry the microphone over. So now you get to hear us from both sides. Anyways, as we go and move along, now those who aren't going to call in toll-free, please give us a call. I give you guys readings. I work as a psychic medium and a paranormal investigator. I'm actually chatting with you folks here from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'll let you know that out there I've been doing readings for quite a few years, well over 20 years professionally. The work that I do as well, let some of you know that are new in this field and know that don't know what I do. I work as a paranormal investigator as well, so I do a lot of ghost hunting in this territory, in my area. I want to let you guys know too, we have a bit of a disappointment. I've advertised, consistently about the Paracon 2009 that's supposed to be held in Las Vegas. It was supposed to be held on February 16th and 17th. Due to conditions that could not be, so controlled, they lost their license to hold the Paracon 2009. So apparently, I was very disappointed. The people themselves didn't really make the correct arrangements. They should have contacted the hotels first, because apparently a lot of people made contacts. They did contact the hotels, and the hotel said there was, as far as they know, they don't know anything about no Paracon 2009. It seemed a little suspicious. A lot of people got upset, and so we made some phone calls. Apparently, last night we were informed that it was actually canceled. So apparently, I don't know what's going on. What the situation was, we had a full go on the whole thing. So what I had done is I informed everyone that the Paracon 2009 for Las Vegas has been canceled. It's the second time that it's been trying to run itself on, to go, and it just doesn't work. I'll let you guys know out there, anyone ever wants to put on a show like this, it is very expensive to put one together. If you're going to put something together like this at all, you have to have sponsors. And there's two types of sponsors. Ones that those are supportive sponsors, ones that actually have radio stations, music shops, that sort of thing. They, in return, will offer you programs, free programs, complimentary programs, or complimentary instruments as far as technical instruments are concerned, especially microphones, speakers, and all that. And in return, they ask you to advertise them with banners on stages so that people actually will look up and or contact them to help them support the programs. But in return, you still have to have also paid sponsors. You have to have people that will actually will offer you to support you. So basically, the paid sponsors means people will loan you, will give you money, and you're advertising them on your in your program. So you're letting them know that if anybody wants to, say, and go to a specific music shop or to a certain theater or somebody that you're supporting in the community, if that person is offering you, pays you $100 or $1,000, you make a sponsor ad, you put that on your flyer or any type of advert that lets the public know that person actually helps support financially the program. That's one thing you've got to do first, long before that you decide to put something on and there's no advertising whatsoever. Yes, anybody can advertise on the internet. Yes, anybody can advertise in the newspaper, but you have to get your hotels or location, which you are, where you're going to hold your site. And that was not taken care of. And so that's the disappointment part of it. I'm surprised that these people were, I thought they were professional enough to know better, but apparently did not work out. I don't know why. Maybe they got cold feet. I don't know. I have no idea. I never did hear back from them. Others have talked to them. I did not hear back from them. And so people have told me that it's definitely not on. It's been shut down. So that's fine. But there are other paranormal conferences that are legitimate, that are out there, that are doing very successful, and these guys know what they're doing. You got to know how to promote people. I've been doing this for, when I was promoting, putting on wellness shows, I've been doing it for, two shows a year. And I did it for about 2.5 years. Two shows a year. So I mean 6 months one show, 6 months another, putting it together. And it was successful. And I was very successful with it. And, I put an email out. I let everybody else know that I know in my area. And I actually, I brought in a lot of people that were famous as well, that were going to participate. And I asked them if they want to join us, and they said they would love to. And they also offered financial support for sponsor the Paracon 2009. But I don't know what happened from there, but apparently I was told that the Paracon even turned them down. I don't know why. I have no idea. But, I'm not going to mention names who are the people that help support the sponsors, because I feel that it's important that it's private for them unless they want it to be announced. But I've spoken to them last night about it. And these are well-known people in the field of music as well as entertainment. So I know a lot of people in the years of my work as a medium, and I was trying to support, again, that field, but some people... I'm sorry, guys. You burn people, you make your mistakes. You burn them again, no one's going to contact you for the longest time. Now you got to earn your reputation back to be accepted back in the paranormal community. So I'm sorry to hear this. It all didn't work out. I'm not angry. I never was. I'm disappointed because, I mean, yes, I understand how hard people have tried to put things together. But you also got to learn too. You got to be in control. You got to take control of the reins. You got to take control of the horns take the bull by the horns. If you don't, you'll gore yourself. You know, typically. Anyways, those who actually want to call in toll free, as the phones are open right now as we speak, and these toll free numbers are online. They're 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 in the U.S. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. international callers is 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. I have an editorial here in front of me that I was wanted to share with you, and it's one of our newspapers that we get every 2 days of the week, and I was totally shocked when I read this story about a woman who now is in her 70s. And in 1963, a woman by the name of Linda McDonald, a wife and a mother of five, awoke at the age of 26 with no memory of her past, and she didn't know how to read or take care of herself, nor did she know she had been a test subject in a government-funded brainwashing experiment. Okay? This is back, folks, back in 1963. Okay, I feel like I'm Alex Jones. Anyways, she doesn't recall returning 16, because basically she didn't remember that she actually was 16 years old, or what it felt like to fall in love for the first time, and she doesn't remember getting married or even giving birth to five of her children. Linda McDonald now sits in her Surrey apartment, Surrey, British Columbia, Canada, next to a picture of the one child who still speaks to her, and I've got pictures here, I'll show you them in a few minutes, folks. She pieces together information that others have offered about her first life, the life that she can't remember. One day when Linda was four, she waited on the sidewalk for the bus that would take her to preschool. It drove right by herself, she chased it down the street until the driver stopped and let her on. Linda heard the story from her mother, who said that she had always been a fiery child, a gregarious Leo who loved to be in the spotlight dancing and singing. Born in Vancouver and raised in Ottawa, Ontario, she started vocal lessons when she was 12 and was already singing with the Orpheus Operatic Society at 15. The music, like Linda's personality, was loud, social, and attention-grabbing. Linda met her husband in high school. 2 years older, the dark-haired Tony Curtis lookalike was brainy and serious, a stark contrast to her character. He went to Queen's University while Linda planned to attend Teachers College after her first year. However, they decided to marry. The couple asked Linda's parents for their blessings, but they refused, worried that 18-year-old Linda, 18, would distract her boyfriend from school. A few months later, they eloped. Linda's mother was so upset when she found out Christmas Eve that she kicked her out. Although she had no memory of being forced to leave home, Linda images how painful it must have been. Shortly after her husband graduated, the couple started their family. Linda had five children in less than 4 years, and before she was 24. All the while, they moved from the city to city, depending on where her husband found work, and she estimates they moved at least 14 times. In August 1961, Linda began showing symptoms of what would now be diagnosed as deep postpartum depression. Between periods of wellness, when she was her normal, perky self, and she had strange hallucinogenic episodes, she would wake in the middle of the night and vacuum. The deeper the depression went, the more it may have developed into psychosis. After 2 years, her family doctor recommended they make an appointment at the Montreal's Allen Memorial Institute with Dr. Ewan Cameron, past president of the American and the Canadian Psychiatric Associations. His credentials were impressive. Linda's husband took her to the Allen Institute and left her there. Within 3 weeks, she was set up to the sleep room. Linda's medical records that she was admitted March 28, 1963, and treated as schizophrenic without being diagnosed as one. In the sleep room on Ward 2 South, she was subjected to a 109 electrocompulsive therapy, ECT, treatments in less than 5 minutes. Almost 70 of those were Paige Russell's, which consisted of an initial jolt of 150 volts for 1 second. A standard ECT is 110 volts, followed by 5 shocks of 100 volts to produce multiple convulsions. Along with 2 Paige Russell's a day, she was kept in a drug-induced sleep. for at least 86 days while being subjected to psychic driving in which she was forced to listen to messages on an endless loop tape. It was all done without evidence of mental illness. Her parents visited her once and later told Linda that she had been a zombie speaking gibberish, nodding in and out of sleep. They thought it was a schizophrenia, and they trusted the doctor. Linda's mind was wiped out all memory. Nurses had to toilet train her and teach her to eat with a fork, and it would be more than 20 years before she would learn what was done to her at the Allen Institute. Early one morning in September 1963, Linda's husband was about to leave for work. The house was missing the sounds of their five children who had been living with family members out for the previous 6 months, and she didn't notice. At the age of 26, she had no memory of her children or that she was married. The stranger who was her husband led Linda to the couch and brought her breakfast, lunch, and some pills. He showed her a strange device called a telephone and told her not to use it. He locked the door and left. Linda sat on the sofa motionless and stared at that big black box on the stand. There were markings on the TV's buttons, but she didn't know how to read them. Linda's family was given specific instructions upon her discharge. Don't teach her anything unless she shows a keen interest. Don't let her have much contact with her family, and don't remind her of her past. They were told if her money or memory came back, her illness would return as well. She was only told that she went to an institution because she was sick and Dr. Cameron made her better, and when she was released into her husband's care, there was no follow-up or counseling, just a daily prescription of 28 pills. Linda remembers meeting three strangers at Thanksgiving, her mother, father, and sister, and she finally saw her children at Christmas, and all five of them, even the two-year-old twins, were more intellectually advanced than she. The oldest approached her and said hi, prompting others to do the same. But they gravitated towards their father. The twins cried. Looking back now, Linda suspects that they must have been frightened. And when they eventually came to live with her, she just regarded them as other people's children. Linda didn't think it was unusual. She did not have a past, and she was an eager student, dependent on her teacher, her husband. And she learned how to play guitar. By the fall of 1964, she could scramble an egg. In 1965, Linda learned to drive away, and it was also, drive again. And it was also at this point that she understood that she was a mother with children and decided to let go of the family's nanny so she could take over household duties. In 1966, she auditioned for her first play, and she longed to know what it felt to be a pregnant and had her sixth child that same year. Although Linda was relearning how to be an adult on the outside, emotionally she was naive and innocent, and she lacked social skills and often acted out in the childish way. And she felt left out of her own life. Everyone knew more about Linda than she did. There were also severe marital problems, and Linda divorced her husband in 1972, and in the process, she lost her children. With fierce conviction, she set off on her own, determined to find out who she really was, and she began dating another man and made money singing in nightclubs. A quick learner, she got her first job at a church. When that ended, she moved in with her parents in Ottawa. On a day in 1976, Linda was in her mother's kitchen when she heard beautiful voices lofting from the record player. She was drawn to the sound, but didn't know why. "Who's that?" she asked her mother, who looked back stunned. There were two voices filling the room, one singing and a beautiful mezzo-soprano. The other, a soprano, was oddly familiar, and she listened, entranced. The recording was of Linda at just 18 years old, singing with her sister. But as her knowledge of her past grew, so did the frustration of not being able to relate to what she was being told. She decided to leave and start again. In 1978, she moved to Vancouver, B.C., living off odd jobs and singing in bars. No one knew her name, and no one knew her past. In January 16, 1984, was a cold, rainy morning. Linda was now 47. walked into the Vancouver building where she worked as a rehabilitation officer for the unemployed, grabbed a bundle of newspapers, and took them with her to the 12th floor. She lit a cigarette and walked into her office where she dropped one of the papers on her desk. Her eyes caught the front page. Linda's cigarette dropped to the floor, and she fell to her knees and scrambled under the desk to find it. She threw the paper against the wall. Trembling, she shuffled down the hall, got a cup of coffee, and returned to her office, closing the door behind her, and she gathered up the newspaper and read how, from the 1950s to the early 1960s, a Dr. Cameron used brainwashing experiments at one point funded by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, in an attempt to cure mental illness. Cameron, who died in 1967, had subjected patients to ECT treatments in an attempt to depattern their brains, wiping them of memory and experience. He then administered untested combinations of barbiturates, antipsychotic drugs, and hallucinogens such as LSD to keep patients subdued, but the responsive to psychic driving, replaying messages to replace their memories with his own ideas. Scenes of Linda's life began coming back, relearning to read and write, and a failed marriage, the loss of her children, and she was angry and horrified. She read how 9 of Cameron's victims were suing the CIA for funding the project. Linda picked up the phone and called the reporter who wrote the story on "I Want to Be Number 10," she says. The CIA funded Dr. Cameron's experiments from 1957 to 1960. Having been admitted in 1963, Linda went on a search to find out who paid for the project when she was a patient. To her disbelief, she discovered it was the Canadian government. She sought legal counsel in 1988. Her case was taken on by a lawyer, Thomas Berger, and colleague Ron Shulman. It was then Linda discovered her medical file and learned of the experiments to which she had been subjected. She decided to sue the Canadian government. Having frequented Berger's office often in the last 4 years, Linda was used to its warm, comforting tone when she arrived on a November day in 1992. But the atmosphere was different. Linda had the first scene of it when she was called to the Gastown building, and she knew it was about compensation. Berger and Shulman were standing waiting for her, and Linda immediately sensed disappointment. They showed Linda from Justice Minister Kim Campbell and asked her to sit down to read it. Linda's eyes scanned the legal jargon, picking up just enough words to understand. The Canadian government would compensate Linda and every victim who could establish they had been subjected to depatterning. There were 80 people with $100,000 given to them each. 80 people. If accepted, Linda could never again sue the government, the Allen Memorial Institute, or Dr. Cameron's estate. It wasn't an admission of fault. There wasn't even an apology. Linda was stunned, but relieved. After years of fighting and seemingly endless, frustrating legal battles, she was ready for it to end. She picked up the pen. Linda began to write her book 8 years ago. The compensation money was long spent. A large portion was used to pay her mother's back for past loans. The rest was gone. When she wanted to publish her music, Linda bought soundboards, microphones, amplifiers, and recording equipment. Wanting to become a TV personality, she spent thousands on a broadcast course. But writing the book wasn't just another impulsive idea. After conflict with management at her job, she left on medical stress leave and immersed herself in the task of getting her story on paper. If she could get it published, she thought maybe her children would read it and understand she didn't abandon them. But at least, very least, maybe it would help others suffering with depression or complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Linda started seeing a psychologist herself for the condition. For a year, she spent every day at her computer, combining her own memories with the information she gathered over time from friends and family about her first life. Her roommate walked her to Shih Tzus, Bo and Jazz, and brought dinner to her desk, and at which point Linda would resurface to watch CNN and eat before returning to live some of her most haunting memories, and she cried over the keyboard and become infuriated at the scenes coming back to life. She never did return to work. As she spent month after month of long hours hunched over her writing, her health began to deteriorate. After fighting a mental battle for so long, she now found herself struggling physically, and she developed emphysema, and her hips began to give out. But promising plans with a publisher kept her going until 2006, when the arrangement fell apart. Linda continued the project on her own. Looking back now, Linda wishes she had taken her case to court. $100,000 was not enough to compensate for what did to those people and me, and it was not. While her children know of the case and what was done to her at the Allen Institute, all but one had drifted away over the last 10 years. Linda suspects they grew tired of her pleading for their understanding. I chased them to try to understand and understand, please understand. I needed them to know the story, and they didn't want to know. She holds on to memories of the years she was with them, from the birth to her last child, to when she went into their father's custody and never came back. As soon as Linda opens her eyes in the morning, she forces herself to get up. It's okay to revisit her past when writing her book, but if she does so while lying in bed, the sheer weight of the thoughts may keep her from rising at all. They clawed her strength, the fact that she can no longer muster enough air in her lungs to sing, that she only received one card last Mother's Day, that it's raining outside and she won't be leaving her apartment today. Not that she gets out much. She spends most of her time at home, where the rhythmic gasps of her oxygen machine are a constant reminder that she can only move as far as the tubes allow. The picture of a 71-year-old, younger, healthier self is mounted on her wall. Her vibrant red hair wisping away from her eyes, although she still has the same familiar wide smile, Linda is thinner now. Her contact with the outside world comes from visits by home support workers, the handy door driver who drops her off at the grocery store, and an occasional journey by scooter across the street to the mall. But she'll think about those things later when she's writing again. For now, she swings her legs over the bed, stands as tall as her body allows, and walks to the mirror. Today is this Sunday. My name is Linda McDonald, and I am beautiful. And she still has to remind herself who she is. It's interesting that this doctor didn't even know postpartum depression is basically from women who, after have a baby, they go through that. He never even assessed her. And that's what really drove me. I thought, the CIA and our Canadian government? Typical. They're going to experiment on you no matter who you are, and they're doing it to this day. They still are. Sorry, folks, but it's true. I did a lot of research lately, and I've been finding it that it's happening to a lot of people, and to this day, people are still being assessed, but they're not getting assessed correctly. So the thing is that these things happen, and we have to understand that $100,000 does not get you anywhere. You know, there was a fellow that was imprisoned for a good 20-plus years in the Montreal jail here in Canada, and he was not the man who killed someone. But the police thought he looked suspicious enough, and they never did the investigation, just arrested him and said, yeah, you did it, you're the one that did it, and we'll put you in jail. The guy was in jail for 20 years. The Canadian government knew they were wrong by wrongful imprisonment, and they went to court and they fought it. When the young man was fighting for 20 years to fight for his freedom, when they finally realized that, you know, we do have ways by using DNA to find out who was the killer and who's not, his man's DNA was nowhere anywhere near the murder victim. So the Canadian government actually compensated him $6.5 million. Now, is this man happy that he got $6.5 million? Or what else did he get from them? Did the Canadian government say, I apologize, we screwed up? They didn't say a word. They don't say a word. And these things happen. So we always get frustrated. We don't know why. You know, myself being as a reader, paranormal investigator, we do all kinds of information investigating because sometimes people pass away in locations and we always find that if you just move into a new apartment or a new house or an older home, and some people will notice that there's actually unsettling activity in the house. Sometimes unsettling activity can also relate to people that have passed away that are actually were mentally disabled or mentally unstable. Doesn't mean the person's angry with you. They're probably mentally unstable. You never know. They could have been experimented on as well. We don't know. Or maybe they were drug users themselves. We don't know. But these things do happen. We do come across this kind of stuff. But I felt bad for her and for this woman here. And it's funny that we don't get apologies from the government, and they don't do to this day, and they never will, because as far as they're concerned, we are the guinea pig, and we're still the guinea pig. They experiment on us all over. You'll notice that even though PETA has tried to make it mandatory that you cannot experiment on animals for medical purposes, so now they experiment on us. And if we either make it or we don't, because there's no law that says you can't experiment on us. So that's why we were the human guinea pig. So I would say to folks out there, always start working on traditional medicines now and start to learn to take care of yourself at times. Got another word of news. Strauss Herb Company have been fighting to legally protect a lot of our herbs. And apparently, they went to court. We lost the case. The court now has actually stated that anything you take from a flower, anything you take from a peanut, anything that you take from a piece of chocolate or a piece of rice, and they gave it a name, is considered as a drug. That means it needs, they would have to be prescribed. So, meantime, that's taken away from us. Our rights are taken away from us that we can no longer have use. Down the road, it will come to the point where we won't have any access to herbs freely. That we cannot, the government's trying to make sure that we cannot experiment on ourselves or even to even take our own herbs. They want to prescribe everything, including vitamin B. You would have to get a prescription, vitamin B. Now, you know how much vitamin B's cost, right? It's cheap. But they in Germany, the vitamin B is $150 by prescription. So these things happen. Yes, this radio, live radio is here, and we are live on bbsradio.com. It's www.bbsradio.com. I am Derek Whitesky Cloud, and I'm a psychic medium and paranormal investigator. And those of you who are coming into the Pal Talk chat room, welcome. And those in the BBS Radio chat room, welcome. If you guys want to get a reading, please call in our station. It's toll-free numbers. It's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And we also have 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And international callers is 530-876-3222. 530-876-3222. Now, next week, my wife took my schedule. next week, on my show, we're going to have two people. We're going to have another psychic medium. Her name is Silvana Fillmore. Now, Silvana Fillmore is actually originally from Australia, but she's also a psychic medium, and she also will be coming on our show next week. She actually is one of the challengers to the America's most, what is it, America's best psychic. There was a competition on last year on TV, America's most talented, it's actually the best psychics in the United States, I think it's America's best psychic, I don't have the thing in front of me. My wife took the schedule from me, she figured that if I'm on this headset, she'll take the other phone, and next thing you know, it's not here. Anyways, she's also going to bring on a very special friend, Michael Sanduco, who's also a, if you remember the song, I'm not sure if you guys remember the song. You remember hearing the song, "She's a maniac, maniac on the floor." Da-da-da-da. You remember that song? Okay. Michael Sanduco is going to be on the show. And he says, "Derek, I can hardly wait to come on your show and be interviewed." So both of them are coming on next week, next Tuesday. And I talked him in to see if he can play a song for us. So I'm hoping that he can do that. I'll just slide one in. Yeah. Anyways, so we got some pretty good people coming up next week. What else we have here? And the, oh yeah, oh yes. And also, yes, okay. Also, we are on the, those of you who wish to be part of BBS Radio, now, we do have our programs that are always constantly going, 24-7, by the way. I think we've got a caller calling in. Hello?
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 Hi, Derek, how are you?
Good, who am I speaking to?
It's Zita in Minneapolis, again.
Oh. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yes.
Within the last week, I had a friend from 25 years ago contact me. We were very, very good friends back when we both worked at a hotel and lost contact, and all of a sudden he found me through the Internet and made contact, and I wanted to know if you could tell me if this is going to be a good contact or if I have anything to worry about. Because basically what he told me is that he has been, and he put in parentheses, stalking me for the last 30 years and finally got up the nerve to send me an email.
He said he's been stalking you for 30 years?
That's what he said. He's an attorney and a private investigator. So he's been checking up on me to see if I'm married or single or where I've been moving to or...
Well, gee, I wonder why. Maybe this guy is kind of interested in you.
Pardon me?
I think this guy is kind of interested in you.
That's kind of the impression that I get, but I don't know if I should have any alarm bells going off or not.
I don't feel anything bad about it, but I will say this, that my heart pounds hard. And when I get a pounding in my heart, it's almost like there's bubbles of hearts. Like this guy, I guess this guy's got to actually have a crush on you.
He said he did back then, 25 years ago, but we were both dating somebody at the time. And we were just really good friends. We never pursued it back then. And then he left and moved out to California and never heard from him again. But, I mean, his name pops up in my mind every once in a while just because it's an unusual name. But I never, I didn't know where he was. And I figured, he and Jerry got married and moved out to California and never heard anything from him. So... And then all of a sudden, completely out of the blue, I get an email from him.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know if I should have any concerns.
I don't feel anything bad about it. It's more like, he says he's been stalking you for 30 years.
That's
he's
what
doing
he
pretty
said.
Good.
Yeah, he said you keep a really low profile. He says you have no criminal record. He says you pay your bills on time. He says, you've never moved. I said, no, I've never moved. So, yeah, he's been watching me for 30 years.
At least he worked up the nerve to give you a call.
Well, he said that. I know, and him being this big, huge, and he's an environmental attorney, and he's a spiritualist, and he's, you know, he seems like a really cool guy, and he hasn't changed a lot from what I remember of him. But I just thought it was kind of bizarre that after all this time that he just all of a sudden found me.
I would look forward to meeting him. If he ever gets a chance, if he wants to come up and visit you, I would say, yeah, go for it. I don't get anything negative about it.
Good. Good.
No, not at all.
Well, good. That's what I wanted to know. I'm kind of looking. It's kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
These things just don't happen to me. So, okay. But that's
No.
So, it's all a good thing, then.
It is. It's all good.
Good. That's what I wanted to know. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Derek.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Fuck, you've heard for 30 years. That's so funny. No one's ever. I've never had anybody stalk me for 30 years. I remember I went to my 30-year school reunion. That was what a waste of time. It was interesting to find out what your old school chums were like after 30 years. I mean, I never really had a school chum. I was just that person. But when the school found out that I was there, yes, guys, I did scare them. When I showed up, and they didn't know who I was first, and when I told them who I was, because, you know, after 30 years, you do look different. But when they found it was me, you should see three-quarters of the class, 80% of the class, all moved over to the far side of the building. I'm not kidding you. When they knew it was me, the three-quarters of them all moved over to the far side. They were frightened of me. They were scared. I was like, you guys are nuts. I'm not kidding you. They were afraid. And this is not, it was not the school. The school actually was in Alberta, so I was living in Vancouver here. Anyways, we had the caller calling in.
Yes, hey, this is Shane. How are you?
Hi. Where are you calling from?
Alabama.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Yeah, same here. I do have a question for you.
Yes.
My girlfriend and I broke up a couple weeks ago. The thing was, it seemed like this was one of those relationships that would last forever. Yeah, and kind of over the past few months, I kind of felt like I lost myself. Didn't really want to admit to it. Kind of was in denial. Never really said anything to her. And I think that's what ended up, you know, leading to the breakup. What I was wondering is, do you see us getting back together, and what do I need to do in order to help make that happen?
Is this a Shane that I know from Alabama?
I don't know. I'm not sure if you know me or not.
Okay. Do you know Dr. Jimmy?
Yes, I do. Yep. Dr. Jimmy Lowry. Yes, yes.
Well, hi, Shane. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
We know each other.
Yeah, it has been a while. In fact, I've recently been back in touch with Dr. Jimmy, and we're going to see what we can do about getting things rolling on our end again.
Yeah, you guys got to, really.
Yeah, we're looking.
APR Star is dying out. We need the old people back.
Oh yeah, we're definitely planning on getting some investigations lined up and seeing what we can do. And there's one I'm working on right now that hopefully, if it comes through, it may be a good one for us.
Is Alabama, did it have, like at the end of the November, December, did Alabama have a year of breakups with girls all of a sudden? I've never heard so many guys break up with their wives and girlfriends this past, I would say, 3-4 months before the end of 2008.
I know. I've heard the same thing from a few people. Jimmy, in fact, was talking about that the other day. But unfortunately, it was her that broke up with me. So, but
really?
I was going... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Are you married to her?
No. As a matter of fact, right, not long before the breakup, we had discussed getting married.
Okay.
I was about to come out of a divorce when I met her and finally got my divorce, and that's what put a strain on me that kind of caused me to lose myself, because I wanted to keep her happy, you know, my girlfriend happy and all that.
Yeah.
Of course, she stood by me the whole way, you know. she was a great girl. You know, we're it just seemed like one of those things, you know, that would last forever. And like I said, I kind of lost myself along the way, and you know, it kind of got bad for me. And she asked me what was wrong. I never would tell her, then finally it kind of came to a head a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, it was too late. You know, when I opened my eyes, it was a little bit too late. So
yeah.
But we actually went out on a date this past weekend, and that went very well. But as far as, you know, I was just curious whether you could see us maybe getting back together, she was still in love with me, or what I needed to do in order to get her back, because she's a very special woman. I might know what I can do.
Well, let me see what I can do here. For some reason, I hope it's not like Dr. Jimmy's, because I remember, like, even Jimmy got broken up too, and I hope it's not the same similar thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why they broke up. I mean, they never told me. I didn't ask.
I mean, I'm just wondering if it's very similar. I mean, I don't know why Jimmy got broken up with Heather. I have no idea why it all happened. I was never told. But I'm just curious if it's something to do with you guys doing the paranormal work.
No, actually, as a matter of fact, I have kind of been out of that for a little while lately. Yeah, I took a break from it. In fact, my ex-girlfriend, she was very supportive of me, and she actually encouraged me a lot to get back into it. And
I'm hearing the word strain. So
yeah.
Whatever it is that you two have dealt with, I'm hearing the word strain.
Yeah.
Either you are dumping on her your issues, or she was dumping on you, one of the two, but she felt it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, whether it's your ex-marriage or the relationship, there's something there that drew her down, like make her feel like, I feel that she was not getting enough recognition of her wanting for this relationship to work, but I also feel that she doesn't want you how do you explain it? You know, when you leave a marriage and suddenly go to another one, she wants
right.
a true marriage. She wants us a true love and not just bouncing from someone else's relationship.
Right. Yeah. Now the thing, before I met her, me and my ex-wife had planned on getting divorced for a while. So I mean, as far as a rebound thing, you know, it wasn't anything like that. In fact, especially at first, me and her took it very slow, and then it, you know, developed into something really good, and everybody could see it in us. But as far as the strain, I think I probably put some of that on her, because she saw how, you know, I had changed a little bit, that I had lost my sense of humor. I'd kind of get withdrawn a little bit every now and then, and she'd ask me what was wrong, and I never would tell her. I'd make up excuses. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I want to say that I wouldn't say became overbearing to her, but it was like wanting her constantly around, you know, where I felt like I didn't give her enough space.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's that word burden.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you've got to, I strongly feel you need to, what's the last time you ever given her flowers?
Oh, yeah, I would give her flowers all the time. All the time. Not recently, though, no.
I think you deserve it. You need to really sit her down and share with her what you're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an experience of three marriages. But before, I was never expressive with myself. I was never very open to people. I used to shut down.
Right.
And then I then I would never figure things out why I got separated. I just left, figure, if I run away from this, they'll all go away. But it didn't go away. You have to learn to face the challenges, and you got to ask the questions why. But I would say talk to her and sit with her and say, why are we separating here? What's the cause of it?
Right.
What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
Right. Well, I know what she's afraid of. She went through a bad marriage herself, got divorced in around 2005, and so what she went through is still, you know, kind of hanging on to her.
But you just finished repeating yourself, Shane, because what you just finished saying, I just finished saying before that,
right,
that it's all to do with falling out of a relationship that she's thinking that it's she may repeat itself again.
Right.
So she's got to understand that you really do love her and care for her, that you would never walk away.
Right. Well, do you see us getting back together, then?
I would say yes, but you need to sit her down and really have a good chat with her and give her the flowers and give her a card.
Yeah.
You know, write to her. You know, men have forgotten, women and men have forgotten to write. I'm not text. Guys, don't text. Just write to them.
Right, and you know, I did that. Whenever we had that talk, you know, when she broke up with me, you know, I had kind of wrote out a letter, but I felt like, you know, she should hear from me, so I read it to her pretty much. Basically explaining what was going on with me and all that, but unfortunately at that time it didn't do any good, you know, because I explained to her, hey, you know, whenever I seemed withdrawn and I gave you those excuses, I said, no, it was all this that was going on with me that I'd been going through over the past few months, and it had nothing to do with you. But my worry at that time was, okay, she was probably thinking, okay, it's me, you know, he's, you know, either something I've done or something like that, and I probably put the strain by, you know, continuously doing that and not being open with her.
You know what, just sit down with her and work with it. We're coming to a close, Shane. I really appreciate you calling in.
All right, well, great. It was good to talk to you, and I'll pass the word along to Dr. Jimmy, you know.
Yeah, tell him I said hey.
All right, well, thanks a lot. I sure appreciate your help, man.
Okay, take care, guy.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, folks, I'd like to call it a night. We come to our closing of time. This is Derek Wise Guy Cloud. Next week, we will be bringing in another good friend on the show, two good friends on the show, Michael Sandeko, and he is also another professional medium. We do also have Sylvana Fillmore, and we're way to meet Michael Sandeko. You guys will know him. Like I said before, like I said, he wrote the song She's a Maniac and many other songs before that, as well as after through the years. Anyways, take care, folks. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, between time, that's another edition of Between Two Worlds Radio. Take care, folks. Bye.